রায়া রাধা গঙ্গা মাই কি জয়, ভক্তি দেবী কি জয়, শ্রীমতি তুলসি মহারানী কি জয়, সামবেদ ভক্তবৃন্দ কি জয়, গো প্রেমানন্দী। All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jinani. Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sri Vedavasvihara Deshitani. Reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, we're in Canto 2, we're on Chapter 3, which is Pure Devotional Service. We're still on Text 24. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tatojayam udirayet nasta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati uttamar shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto Lord Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author, and Srila Prabhupada, the translator and commentator, by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead is established as an irrevocable fact. So text 24 has a very had a long purport. And the person who gave class yesterday was only supposed to read half of the purport, but took the liberty to read the whole purport. So today, and spoke mostly on the second half of the purport, very nicely, which was, so today, due to, based on the scriptures, I'm gonna do the first half of the purport today. And the scriptural reference is that sometimes in the progression of the three, of the four yugas, sometimes they overlap. So, and one yuga comes before another. So that's what I'm doing. So I'm gonna do the first half of the purport today. Hare Krishna. Tad am sam sharam hridayam batedam. Tad asma sharam hridayam batedam. Yad griyamanar harinamadyeyai. Yad griyamanar harinamadyeyai. Navikrityetata yadda vikaro. Navikrityetata yadda vikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tad asma sharam hridayam batedam. Yadri yamanar harinamadyeyai. Navikriyetata yada vikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tadasma sharam hridayam batedam. Yadri yamanar harinam adyayai. Navi kriyataka yadavikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tadasma sharam hridayam batedam. Yadri yamanar harinam adyayai. Navi kriyeta ta yada vikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tadasma sharam hridayam batejam. Yadri yamanar harinam adyayam. Navikriyetata yada vikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tadasma sharam hridayam batedam. Yadri yamanar harinam adyayai. Navikriyetata yada vikaro. Netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tad asma sharam hridayam batedam. Yadri yamanar harinam adyayai. Navi kriyeta ta yada vikaro. netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Tat, that, asmasharam, steel framed, tridayam, heart, bata idam, certainly that, yat, which, griyamanai, in spite of chanting, harinam,
the holy name of the Lord.
Dyei, by concentration of the mind. Na, does not. Vikriyeta, change. Ata, thus. Yada, when. Vikara, reaction. Netre, in the eyes. Jalam, tears. Gatra ruheshu, at the pores. Harsha,
eruptions of ecstasy.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Famous verse. Certainly, that heart is steel framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. Let's say it together. Certainly, that heart is steel framed, which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy. I think so. Hare Krishna. I'm looking up there. What are you guys saying? Sorry. You're probably thinking, what is she saying? Anyway, I'm reading from here. Okay. Important point to note how the exclamation is about someone who's chanting with Hari Nama Dyeya, with concentration. It's surprising. They're saying, Sukadeva Goswami is saying, it's surprising that that heart of the person who's chanting with concentration. So, as far as we go, we even have to come up to that standard. That's our goal, to try to chant with concentration. Anyway, let's go on with the purport. Om Agyanati Medandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksu Unitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master very kindly forced open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Therefore, I'm totally indebted to him and beg for service life after life. Srila Prabhupada's purport. We should note with profit that in the first three chapters of the second canto, a gradual process of development of devotional service is being presented. And this is one of the things that is presented throughout all of the Vedic literature. They're presenting something gradually so that people from all stages of consciousness, from all levels of advancement or even states of not so advanced at all, there's something that they can grab onto and from where they're at, make further progress. So this was delineated in the here specifically in the first three chapters or the previous two chapters of this second canto, where it talked about the first stages in God realization. And that first, Prabhupada's gonna say, okay, here, I'll just read. In the first chapter, the first step in devotional service for God consciousness by the process of hearing and chanting has been stressed. And a gross conception of the personality of Godhead in his universal form for the beginners is recommended. So that first step in God realization in the first chapter of the second canto, when we would read it years and years ago, we would often wonder, why is the first step in God realization to think about the universal form? Why doesn't he just talk about God realization in the form of Sri Krishna, the personality of God, and why not get right to the point? But that is the point of going in this gradual way, is so that people from different stages of consciousness, as I was just saying, can grab onto something and make further progress. In that chapter of the universal form, or meditating on the universal form in this canto, in that chapter, the universal form is presented so that people who don't have a personal conception of the Lord can get some personal conception of the Lord by thinking of the mountains as his bones and as the clouds as his hair, etc., etc., the sun and the moon as his eyes, and that way gradually, slowly get a conception of the Supreme Lord as a person. But as Srila Prabhupada clarifies, that's for the beginners. That's something, that's a bona fide process, and it's the first step, it's a gradual process. So Prabhupada continues, by such a gross conception of God through the material manifestations of his energies, one is enabled to spiritualize the mind and the senses and gradually concentrate the mind upon Lord Vishnu, the Supreme, who is present as the Supersoul in every heart and everywhere in every atom of the material universe. So by being able to at least come to the point where you can admire and acknowledge, let's just say, the forces of nature as superior to our human endeavor, then by continually doing that, one can actually come to an understand, yes, I am insignificant. And there are forces that are behind this universe that are more superior to human force, and gradually understand who is behind that, and that there's a person behind that, and then the Supreme Person being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has all of those potencies. He's the person, as here in this sentence, mentions the gross conception of the Lord, and also mentions that the Lord is situated in the heart as the Supersoul. So already now another stage of realization is added, to see that Supreme Lord is in the heart of every living entity, and not just the human beings, but every living entity, trees, plants, animals, birds, crickets, etc., cockroaches, anything. He's there in the heart. And it's the same batteries, you could say, the same battery that is energizing the elephant body, is energizing the little insect body, is energizing the human body, that spirit soul, the supreme soul that's there in the heart of all living entities. That's the energy behind every living entity. The system of Pancha Upasana, recommending five mental attitudes for the common man, is also enacted for this purpose, namely gradual development. Worship of the superior that may be in the form of fire, electricity, the sun, the mass of living beings, Lord Shiva, and at last, the impersonal Supersoul, the partial representation of Lord Vishnu. So what struck me about that particular sentence was how the Supersoul and is referred to as the impersonal Supersoul. The impersonal Supersoul of whom one doesn't have an intimate relationship with. That's all. Any comments on that? How come the Lord is, the Supersoul is referred to as impersonal Supersoul?
Then how do you explain 1323? Upadrashta Hanumanta, he's overseeing, he knows the past, present, he actually detecting what I need, what I don't need. If somebody is not consciously aware, how would you explain he's a person?
Can you learn to speak into the microphone? Because there's not only people here in the in this classroom that can hear you, but there are other people online. So this is my question. I'm the one who's asking the question. I'm asking if someone can clarify why why the Supersoul is referred to as impersonal. And that only added to the question, but not clarification. So let's go to try to clarify that sentence first, okay? Please, and thank you.
Well, in the Parpar Prabhupada, you just read Pancha Upasana.
Yes.
Pancha Upasana is not a Vaishnava introduction. It's a Shankaracharya introduction. So it's coming from the impersonal concept.
Okay, thanks. Trivikram Prabhu, did you want to add something? Thank you, Prabhu.
I was thinking, even though the super soul has a feature, form and everything, you know, it's described how its size and everything, but I think because we cannot communicate directly with him, you know, then that seems to be impossible.
Good point, thank you. Yeah, there's not, at that particular stage, the living entity doesn't have a relationship, it's not cultivating a relationship. Okay, thank you for that. They are all nicely described in the second chapter of these worships of different forms of the Lord. But in the third chapter, third chapter is pure devotional service, again, progressing on and further Brahman realization, Paramatma realization, and Bhagavan realization. So further development is prescribed after one has actually reached the stage of Vishnu worship or pure devotional service. And the mature stage of Vishnu worship is suggested herein in relation to the change of heart. So this change of heart is quite a central point in the process of bhakti. And being stressed here in this verse and purport and many other places, the change of heart. So the method described in Bhagavad Gita, how to change the heart, param dristva nivartate, by getting a higher taste, by getting a taste for things that give a superior pleasure, a superior spiritual pleasure, then one can very easily give up the taste that we all have in our contaminated hearts for inferior material pleasures. So by getting that higher taste, and Srila Prabhupada's going to further elaborate on how we get that taste in the next paragraph, but by getting that higher taste through the process of hearing of the glories of the Lord and speaking of his glories, then one gets a taste. One, just like kirtan, this morning's Srila Prabhupada's Guru Puja Kirtan, you could see how the devotees were so enlivened. Where's that? That's coming from the higher taste of having chanted the holy name, having honored prasadam for various years, and from hearing the glories of the Lord, and by associating the devotees, that so many, everybody was in ecstasy, dancing away. There's a higher taste. Now, somebody who just happens to walk by the, which never happens, but anyway, somebody just happens to walk by on the veranda who doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, because they'd never come on this far in if they didn't know anything, but anyway, and they look in and they might think, what's all the fuss about? You know, what are they doing? It's weird. You know, they might, because not having developed that taste or not having developed it very much just yet, it's hard to relate to. But once one develops that taste, then it's so simple. It's part of the impetus that motivates us in all of our devotional activities. We see that in the process of Vaidhi Bhakti, following the rules and regulations, there's so many recommendations, one of which is rising early, and then chanting the holy name, and then seeing the deity, then hearing the Bhagavatam class, etc., etc. And all of that takes us, for us to do day after day, it takes a certain taste, and that taste needs to be cultivated. We need to cultivate that taste by carefully following recommendations throughout the day, not just at the early morning, or else the taste won't be there, or the impetus won't be there to rise early, even though one might not feel like it. Even though there might be so many reasons why not to, and this and that and whatever. But these things are important to cultivate so that the taste is there. And once that taste is there, then one tries to protect it, and not only protect it, but also cultivate it so that it continues to grow. So that's the change, that's some of what it's being referred to as the change of heart. Because when we do some introspection and we see the real state of our consciousness, the real state of our consciousness, which is situated in the area of the heart, we see that, yes, we have some attraction to the Lord and devotional service and the association of devotees, but also there's so much attraction to distractions also, material distractions and this and that, and things that where we got pleasure from, or we think we're getting pleasure from, or there's some immediate little buzz from this or that. And it's amazing, isn't it, for those of us who have been executing service for, or attempting to, for various years, various decades, oh my God, decades, still that 100% change hasn't taken place. You know, 100%. There's an attraction, there's this and that, but there's also the other. And so we were, one of the things that we were reading last night in Tattva Sandarbha, Manvati, you have to help me with this part, was that the living entity, the size of the living entity, you know, we've heard through the Bhagavatam that the size of the living entity is 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. So it's so easy to say, you can roll it off your tongue. 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. But if you like, think of that for a few seconds. That's invisible. That's insignificant. That's so. One of the things that came up in the Tattva Sandarbha reading last night, that the living entity, the size of the living entity is so small that it borders on, what is the word, Manu? Borders on non-existence. It's so small, it borders on non-existence. That's small. And yet, the ego that I have is so great and thinks that, you know, I, me, and mine is so important, and I can do an I that, and I that, and this that, and this that, is so great that even after having heard for so long about the real position of the living entity, my position or our position as an insignificant but significantly a servant of the Lord, still it's not what my it's not the major portion of my consciousness, to put it that way. I have to, you know, think to get small again. Otherwise the ego is like huge, even after all this time. Another point, that it's a gradual process. We'll talk about that a little bit more. The whole process of spiritual culture is aimed at changing the heart of the living being in the matter of his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord as a subordinate servant, which is his eternal constitutional position. So, with the progress of devotional service, the reaction of change in the heart is exhibited by gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment by the false sense of lording it over the world, and an increase in the attitude of rendering loving service to the Lord. Since that was a long sentence, I'm going to read it again. So, with the process of devotional service, the reaction of the change in the heart is exhibited by a gradual detachment from the sense of material enjoyment by a false sense of lording it over the world. So that sense of material enjoyment, it's a false sense that we have that we can lord it over the world, but we want to decrease that by increasing the attitude of rendering loving service to the Lord. Vidhi bhakti, or regulated devotional service by the limbs of the body, namely the eyes, ears, the nose, the hands, the legs, as already explained here and before in the previous chapters, is now stressed herein in relation to the mind, which is the impetus for all activities of the limbs of the body. So the mind being the central sense of the body, that is what's giving us impetus to act. So if our mind is thinking that, yes, I'll be happy by doing X, Y, Z, then the instruments of the body, hands, eyes, ears, nose, tongues, legs, etc., go about and try to gratify in that way. So if we're if the mind is absorbed in materialistic activities, which Srimad Bhagavatam continually compares to our eternal position as a servant of God, that material activities have some flavor to them, have some sense of pleasure or suffering to them, but they're temporary, and therefore that temporality makes them so much inferior to the superior position of eternal devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord, our eternal position. So therefore, so there's a piece of knowledge there that will help direct the mind, could help direct the mind, if the mind is, if you're able to catch it fast enough, direct the mind to avoid activities that are entangling one in temporary action and reaction of material existence, and direct them to engage in the activities which will have a much more positive and eternal benefit to our soul. So here this verse is stressing how one should chant the holy name of the Lord. It's Dhyayam, Harinama Dhyayam, Harinama Dhyayai, with concentration of the mind. So that's our goal. That's one of our goals, to chant with concentration. And we can see as we pick up our japa beads at any time of the day or in the early morning, we pick up the japa beads and the mind immediately just wants to just zoom in its manovrata, in its mental platform, all over the universe to all various things other than the sound of the Lord's holy name and the meaning of the Lord's holy name and the concentration of our attitude of service, of developing our attitude of service to the holy name. And therefore, right from the very beginning of picking up our beads, we have to, like, you know, pull in the mind, try to bring it along and focus it in on Krishna. Otherwise, we're pulled away all the time. For most of us, that's the core of our practice right now. That's the very important part of our practice right now, is to try to chant with concentration. The mind is so chanchala, all over the place. It is expected by all means that by discharging regulated devotional service, one must manifest a change of heart. And we can see and experience that in our lives, even though we're keeping the highest goal in mind, the highest goal of, you know, being ecstatically in love with Krishna and not thinking of anything else ever, that's the highest goal. And in the meantime, we can see that, oh, I've been taking prasadam, I've been chanting, and some of the things that I used to be so attracted and attached to, some things are insignificant now. It's not a question. It's not a question of driving by some quote-unquote normal restaurant and being tempted to go in and try the foodstuffs there. It's not even for most of us, it's not even a thing. It's not even a temptation. Because why? We, by Krishna's grace, experienced a higher taste by taking prasadam and chanting. So in other words, one of the occupations of the mind is to try to discourage us in our path of devotional service. Oh, you're never going to make it. Oh, you'll never be able to chant nicely. Oh, it's too hard. Oh, you haven't made any progress. Well, we have made some progress. We need to pick ourselves up and look at the not in an inflated way, but in an encouraging way, look at the progress that we've made. Look from where we've come from, the gutter that we used to live in, thinking that it was so comfortable, and how Srila Prabhupada's brought us to the spiritual world, and we see, oh yeah, this is much superior. So we have made some progress, but we still have a lot more to go. So one of the attitudes or one of the factors of continuing on is to disregard that discouraging negative talk of the mind, how it's impossible. So Prabhupada's talking about the change of heart, and he says, if there is no such change, the heart must be considered steel-framed, for it is not melted even when there is chanting of the holy name of the Lord. We must always remember that hearing and chanting are the basic principles of discharging devotional duties, and if they are properly performed, there will follow the reactional ecstasy with signs of tears in the eyes and the standing of hairs on the body. These are the natural consequences and are the preliminary symptoms of the bhava stage, which occurs before one reaches the perfectional stage of prema, love of Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada, again, is giving us the scriptural guidelines how to practice, and also is giving us encouragement. If we perform these duties properly, if we perform them with proper attitude and proper endeavor and with proper determination, stretching over a proper amount of time or continually day in and day out, then these, just like in our prayer we chanted, one of the prayers that that by rendering service to the pure devotees and by hearing the Bhagavatam, all that's troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service to the personality of Godhead who is praised with transcendental song is established as an irrevocable fact. That's very, very encouraging. It's established by as a fact or a mark on the soul and the consciousness that can never be erased, ever. Even under various circumstances or slip-ups or whatever, even temporary distractions, that taste in the heart that we've received can never be lost. And even if there is some temporary slip-up or distraction or even going back, it seems like, or fall down, that when the reaction to the offense or whatever that caused us to go backwards is done, then that taste is there ready again to sprout up in the mind and the consciousness. So that's the first half of the purport, which the first person was supposed to only cover up to that part. But that's okay. At least you got a good class on the stages of bhava. comments, questions, doubts, corrections, feedback. Trivikram Prabhu.
I was thinking that the earlier you were mentioned about performing all the aspects of devotional service, and that brings about a gradual elevation and cleansing of the heart, you know, by engaging in service and listening to Bhagavatam associated, you know, all these things. But sometimes I notice some of us maybe get focused maybe on a small part of that aspect, and then we get, for example, you know, I might be doing some sort of service, but then I neglect hearing the Bhagavatam, or I neglect associating it, or, you know, so I'm thinking, because that is not there, it's difficult to get one complete in devotion. But if you can add some more to that. Right?
Okay, sure. And it's quite a common thing. It happens a lot. So we get distracted or whatever. So Srila Prabhupada stresses here, and Krishna, you know, in different verses in different ways, especially stresses hearing and chanting as like the thing that's going to sustain us. So, and why is that? Because hearing and chanting is going to give us more impetus, more taste, more encouragement to continue on. And say, for example, someone is, whatever. The hearing and chanting is going to give us the impetus to continue on. So that's why that's stressed. So, and that is not always easy to cultivate a taste for hearing and chanting is not always easy. It's a gradual thing. So, you know, different people have different mentalities. Some people are not studious, some, you know, they're more workers or whatever. So then they engage in serving, you know, just like a traditional example is, oh, come in and help clean the pots. You know, that's okay, that's great, because by doing that service, the heart becomes cleansed, and when the heart becomes cleansed, then the taste for hearing and chanting can be cultivated more. So they're important. The different aspects of the service separately are important, but together the effect is more sustainable. You know, for example, if someone is only washing pots and not hearing and chanting, then it's hard to sustain it, even if but the effect of doing it is always there. You know, the effect of engaging in the devotional service in whatever manner is always there. But to sustain it, one has to become inquisitive to who is that Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is my relationship, and what is his activities, etc., etc. Panchagoda Prabhu.
In the Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that if one is committing offenses to the holy name, then it doesn't have the proper effect, or that doesn't have the effect. But there was also mentioned like Jarasandha and different personalities from Mahabharata were very expertly following all the rules and regulations and very much inclined towards Brahminical culture and following different mantras, but still they were not getting the proper result. And the final thing is, if one is not worshipping Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, then they don't really get the full benefit of understanding of Radha Krishna or the Maha Mantra. So those are three little things I just thought I would add.
Thanks, yeah. Yeah, and Jarasandha and others like that, they were missing one little factor in their dutiful execution of prescribed rules and regulations, and they were missing the factor of that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Other than that, they did okay, but the point is how to develop love for God, so we have to have a little attraction for that. Thank you.
What about the offenses?
Offenses. Well, that's a big topic. Offenses is what keeps us from getting that taste. The Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the chief of all the offenses is inattentive chanting. So that's why we have to strive, you know, we have to make our endeavor. And at least my personal realization at this stage is, for me, it's impossible. So therefore, I need to make my endeavor and pray for the mercy of the Lord for his help. So it's recommended that if one is making offenses in chanting the holy name, the cure, the way to overcome that, is to chant more. Which is counterintuitive, isn't it? It's spiritually intuitive to chant more and beg more for that mercy of the Lord. Because by prayers that are offered in that real mood of begging and crying out, those prayers are like special delivery, Amazon Prime prayers, you know? They like special delivery, delivered very quickly to the Lord. Whereas the other prayers of, oh yeah, I give this, oh Krishna, please help. Prime. Transcendental Prime. I was thinking when he put the garland on Srila Prabhupada, I mentioned to him, it was the perfection of Amazon Prime delivery today. Hare Krishna. So we need to focus in on that, and that heartfelt prayer, I'm making my endeavor, but because of my past accumulation of sinful activities, my endeavor is so meager, you know, my endeavor. Some other word I want to use. My ability to concentrate is so meager because of so many past activities that I've done for eons and eons and eons and eons of lifetimes, that just like the cocoon, just like the silkworm that's made the cocoon and actually gets trapped inside of it, we're trapped inside of our own reactions to our own sinful activity, but not hopelessly, because Krishna is the supreme cocoon buster. I don't know why I said that, sorry.
Good one.
Pran Govinda Prabhu. Ah. Okay.
Anyway, or Jarasandha or any of those examples, that prime example, common thing amongst all of them is that if they are not aware what the offense is and they hear the Krishna supremacy, they should accept Krishna. Even Jarasandha used to worship Vishnu but would not accept Krishna as a origin of Vishnu or as incarnation of Vishnu. So it was an offense in that case, I would say, consciously made with enmity in the heart. Mm.
It was not a like a they never heard. So they heard it, but they consciously choose not to accept Krishna's position as a supreme being.
Yeah. And how
so it was, I would say, consciously made with enmity in the heart.
Yeah.
That's what offense.
And how about this, adding this, and made still with that desire to try to lord it over the material energy,
yeah.
Thinking they're the supreme or they can do that. Yeah, that desire to lord it over the supreme, lord it over material nature, that pervades a lot of things that we do.
Another thing I was thinking also, like when we are hearing every day Bhagavatam or study group or whatever, we are acquiring knowledge. When we are acquiring knowledge, what do we do with this? So I feel like it's giving us a chance, a choice to make. Otherwise, what's the value of the knowledge? Value of the knowledge is like a giving a conscious choice. Should I chant or not chant? If I don't chant, then my consciousness will go down. I mean, it's not like going to be like neutral position. So I have to go either this side or that side, either material or spiritual.
Uh-huh.
So that conscious choice. Also another point I was thinking, like when we have, you mentioned very nicely that how we have a joyful experience of kirtan today. Like every day we do. Whether chanting, Harinam or Japa, we have some experience of.
Mm-hmm.
So when we hear Bhagavatam class from you and from others, then we have a choice to make. Okay, there is Maya's temptation. I mean, I do this myself even to protect myself. But if I go that route, if I contemplate more, I'll be succumbed. Who is responsible for that? It's me. I allowed it. So that choice we have, that's why hearing is so important, that we have a knowledge to make that choice. Okay, I'm not going to go that route. I know where it's going to take me. So I stop it right there. So it's necessary. Otherwise, how we are going to progress in reality?
Mm-hmm. I was thinking as you were speaking, is it the 17th chapter or the 18th chapter that talks of Gita, that talks about the five factors of action?
18, 14.
Thanks. So it talks about the five factors of action, which are? No, I want the English, please. The five factors in English. The five factors in English. Can you give us the five factors in English?
The doer, the field of activities,
the senses,
endeavor,
and the super soul. Yeah, the super soul. So those five factors in action, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains how the mind is the impetus for all activities. So again, it was mentioned in the purport, and according to what you were saying, if we're gathering information, and by the information that we've gathered, that we have in our mind and heart, that's how we base our activities on. You know, I'm going to do it or I'm not going to do it, because that's an impetus. So as you were saying, I'm trying to back up what you're saying in a kind of a roundabout way, but anyway. So by hearing the information from the Shastras and then by acting on that information, that's our impetus. That gives us the strength to act on the instructions of the Shastras. Okay.
And then the question will come. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
We have a few minutes.
So the question will come.
When are you going to take the microphone? That's the question.
The five factors. But out of five factors, one is most important.
Which one?
Is the me, the initiating cause. I am desiring to do this. I am desiring to enjoy separately from Krishna. Now, Krishna may sanction it, Maya may produce this, Maya may show me everything, but originally it was me. Mm. I'm not everything, I'm not all the doers, but initiating cause is me. Krishna is a sanctioning cause.
That's why the Srimad Bhagavatam and the scriptures continually and constantly tell us that we're responsible for our position that we're in.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you very kindly. Hare Krishna, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi.